You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Heyo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox postgame show. Presented by PointsBet, use promo code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Welcome into Studio A of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm Sean Anderson, the host of the CHGO White Sox podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean underscore W underscore Anderson. And alongside me today, Jared Willis. I'm so used to saying Herb Lawrence or Vinny Duber. Jared Willis. You can follow Jared on Twitter at J Willis. The I's are Y's, so it's J-W-Y-L-L-Y-S. He is the CHGO White Sox and CHGO Cubs beat writer covering both teams. You're just a baseball guy.
I just love baseball, so wherever I can get it.
Yeah, absolutely. You were at Dylan Cease's fantastic performance yesterday. You're hanging out with us today. So we'll be recapping the Twins and White Sox series. We'll be recapping today's game. We'll be going out to Guaranteed Rate Field and talking to Vinny Duber. And we'll be talking about the White Sox rest of the year, the rest of their remaining schedule, and see where they can make up ground against Cleveland. Cleveland's currently losing to Seattle, but that one's in a rain delay. Not sure if that one's going to get picked up and continued, so that might not end up being a loss for the Guardians. We'll wait and see, though. We are joining you after a White Sox loss. They lose 5-1 today. It was kind of up, it was kind of down, but mainly it was the story we've seen for most White Sox games. They couldn't hit.
Yeah, this game looked very familiar. It's like a lot of what we've seen throughout the season where the offense just can't get anything going. They've got at least one spot where it looked like there was a real opportunity to break the game open there in the seventh inning, and just they don't get the hit to fall where they needed to fall. And then just not being able to keep the game close, because when you add the Twins add on the run in the eighth and then two more in the ninth, it pushes that one out of reach, because, you know, it's one thing to go into the last couple innings down 2-1, but then when it becomes 3-1 and 5-1, it's just a very different approach that you have to take. So yeah, it's looking at this series as a whole, this was a very successful weekend, but obviously today, you know, just maybe it's the, you know, the natural kind of come down from the big emotional highs of Friday and Saturday, and the guys are just feeling a little flat. Who knows? But you hope that they just bounce back from this and go out to Seattle and keep up the kind of play we've seen before today.
And like you said during our pregame show, where we talked about Dylan Cease's fantastic one-hit outing last night, so if you're looking for a podcast, check your podcast feeds, because we did post the pregame show into those podcast feeds so you can listen to our basically game recap from Saturday. But after that game, you said that the White Sox locker room was as loud as you've heard it before. So yeah, I could see this just being a come down, and Lucas Giolito gave you a decent enough start. I know some fans were complaining on Twitter, shocker, about Lucas giving up a two-run home run to Carlos Correa, but at the end of the day, like, that's going to happen. Carlos Correa has only hit two home runs off you this year. Like, he hasn't really hurt you so much. For a $100 million player going over to Minnesota, like, you'd think that he'd be having more of an impact on these series, but he's just not really being a thorn in the side for the White Sox, except really today. He gives them an 0-0 fastball down the middle, and after a leadoff walk, which Giolito had a couple times today, it'll get out of hand. And especially a guy like Correa, who has that athleticism and can just recognize a fastball like that, it really comes down to you not scoring runs. And we'll get into all of that a little bit later. They didn't have any problem scoring runs on Saturday. Friday was a little bit different. They did get down into an early hole, a 2-0 hole, as Joe Kelly started that game. I thought that was surprising. Davis Martin ended up coming in for Joe Kelly after the first inning and pitching 5 innings, 3 hits, no earned run ball. But Joe Kelly was the opener for the Sox on Friday, and a lot of Sox fans not happy about it. What'd you make of Miguel Cairo going with an opener?
I didn't have a problem with it, even after the fact, because it's the kind of thing where if it works and Joe Kelly gets you 3 easy outs, then no one's got it. Very few people are complaining. The only thing that made me question a little is Joe Kelly has just not looked like himself this year. You know, there's been a lot of things at play there. He's not really been healthy. You know, there's a lot that's contributing to that. But if you have the Joe Kelly of a year ago, 2 years ago, then it's a smart move. You know, start off, you've seen a lot of teams do that. And then it helps with, you know, Davis Martin then can take you a little deeper into the game, and it saves some of the work for the rest of the bullpen. So a move that potentially could have paid off really well. And just, you know, yes, they won, but circumstances would be a little different if Joe Kelly does what you hope that he can do. But yeah, I think it's a move that gets criticized, and it's more outcome based.
Well, right. It's I think absolutely it's outcome based, because, you know, you kind of forget about Joe Kelly being the opener on Friday because they won that game 4-3. He gave up 2 earned runs in over an inning. I understand that Giolito gave up 2 runs over 5 innings, but your starter gave up 2 runs. You weren't able to overcome it today. You're able to overcome it on Friday. So, I mean, it's really less about how you get there. It's just more, can you compete? Can you continue to compete? And, you know, the White Sox made a mistake, it feels like, when they signed Joe Kelly. But, you know, that was, you know, an issue in March rather than September. Right. You have to realize how to use it. And as long as they're avoiding putting him in, like, you know, game, you know, real important situations, like, you know, when they bring in Graveman today in the 8th inning in a 3-1 game. Game, like, you know, maybe I get a little bit weary for Joe Kelly there, but to open up a game 0-0, someone's got to give you an inning. I mean, Joe Kelly can at least give you an inning, and, you know, again, it showed you enough that he's not going to kill the game for you or kill the momentum for you, because you still won that game.
Yeah, exactly, because he's not the guy who you do right now. You don't want to give him a high leverage inning, so you got to use him somehow. You've got to find a way to put him in a position where he can benefit the team as a whole. And again, ideally, he goes out there and gives you 3 outs on Friday, and it didn't work out that way. But given where he's at right now as a pitcher, that's probably one of the best ways that you can use him. You're doing the best you can with what you have, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, he's going to be on the team next year, it seems like, unless they end up buying him out. So you have to figure out what way he can work or can be effective for your team, because come postseason, I really would be shocked if Joe Kelly's not on the postseason roster. Like, I mean, they probably trust his playoff experience, right, his postseason experience being with the Dodgers for so many years, the Red Sox as well. I'd be pretty shocked if they went away from him at come postseason roster deadline, even though I know some fans probably might be hoping for it. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. I mean, I think given what he's done in the postseason, maybe you can justify setting aside what his performance during the regular season this year has been. So yeah, you've got to find a way to use him when and where you can.
Absolutely. And then in that game on Friday in the top of the 8th, Nick Gordon ended up grounding out to second base. Max Kepler scored, making it 3-2, and that's where the White Sox continued the comeback trail. Yasmani Grandal hit a home run in this game off a curveball, off Caleb Thielbar, who ended up pitching in Sunday's game as well, making it a 3-3 game. Grandal also had an RBI earlier on in this game. He also had a nice hit in the 7th inning of Sunday's game as well. We've kind of heard some quotes from him after he had his rehab start down in Charlotte, kind of saying, fuck it, I'm just going to let it all out there. You know, yeah. If my hips break down, my hips break down. And so far, since he's come back from Charlotte, looking more like the Yasmani Grandal of 2021 rather than the Yasmani Grandal that's been really bad in 2022.
Absolutely. And when we spoke to him before Saturday's game, he mentioned a couple of things in particular. One was that he said, this year I've been more careful with my body than I have been any other year. And he said, I'm kind of tired of doing that. So, you know, enough is enough. I'm going to go out there and give what I can, which is exactly what you want to hear from a veteran player when your team is in the position that it's in. There is a point where you have to just say, I got to just go out there and do it. So you know, that's one thing. And the second thing that he mentioned is he said, I've DH'd more this season than I ever have in my career. And it's clear he doesn't like it. He wants to be behind the plate. So if he can get in a spot where he's more comfortable with what he's doing as a player defensively and just able to go out there and be consistently in the lineup, you might see more performances like that. You know, it, provided that his body can hold up, because, you know, you can only force it to a certain extent.
Right, absolutely. And we see Sebi ending up replacing Yaz in Sunday's game after Yaz hits that single. Hazley comes in as a pinch runner, and then we see Sebi have a pass ball. So maybe it shows you that Yasmani might be one of the more trusted guys behind that dish, because now Carlos Perez is down, and it really seems like Sebi and Yasmani are going to be your catchers unless another injury happens. And in big games, I think I'm going to trust Yasmani at this point, just because he has so much experience behind the plate. I know he hasn't been the best defender, but he's still a pretty good framer. I think he's been better with pass balls this year, and the bat has kind of taken a huge dip. But if he's able to perform like he has been over the past couple of games, the White Sox might get some kind of stable production at the catcher spot. Let's talk about how the White Sox won that game on Friday, though. Harrison ended up grounding out to second to start off that inning versus Jorge Lopez. Then Romy Gonzalez single to left field. Then Elvis Andrews single to right, making it first and second with one out for the Sox. Then Andrew Vaughn's hit by a pitch, and the bench is clear. What'd you think of this? The main person leading the Sox out of the dugout, Lance Lynn, screaming at people. It wasn't any, you know, there wasn't a ton of fists, you know, being thrown. It wasn't a huge brawl, but still, seeing the White Sox kind of get riled up by that was pretty good to see.
It was. There are moments like that when you see those things happen, and it felt like the kind of moment that you look back on and say, maybe that's when the tide started to shift, when the vibe with this team started to change. And it makes sense that it would start with somebody like Lance Lynn. You know, he's a veteran. He's a team leader, even though he's not been with the team all that long. He's, especially in that starting staff, the way that some of those younger pitchers talk about Lance Lynn, it wouldn't surprise me if the rest of the roster really looks at him with a lot of respect. There was, I think it was Graveman yesterday who I spoke to, who mentioned Lance Lynn talking to him about Cardinals teams that he was on that didn't have that great of a regular season record that still went on to get into the postseason, that kind of thing. So there's that sort of mentality, and just physically of the kind of person I would not want charging at me angrily. Lance Lynn, I would want no part of that. So, you know, if I'm the Twins and I see him coming at me, that's no good. No, thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm running the complete opposite way. I will be running into the bullpen while all of the bullpen is running out.
I'll be the one guy going that way. So
I'll make sure that no fans are jumping into our bullpen, you know, demolishing it or vandalizing it.
Somebody's
got
to do it.
I'll just stay away from this one. Then the White Sox, with the bases loaded, it seems like Jorge Lopez hits Jose Abreu, ends up hitting off of his knob. So Abreu gets another chance. He grounds a ball into second base. Nick Gordon underhands it, which was very, very stupid, because they get the out at second. But Jose Abreu, we know that this guy never quits. He never takes a day off. He's always hustling. He hustles down the line. The White Sox get the walk-off fielder's choice, which is every baseball's fan's dream. You always think about beating that division rival on that just sharply hit fielder's choice.
I'm sure many fans came to the park that night and thought, man, I hope I see a walk-off fielder's choice.
Well, I know you went to the park on Saturday saying, I hope we get a no-hitter.
Yes, so to each their own. You know, we all show up hoping to see different things. But, yeah, you take the wins how you can get them. It doesn't matter whatever that scorecard looks like at the end. You take that one. But, yeah, one of the most unusual endings to a game I've seen in a long time.
Hey, and we were just talking about it. White Sox Tom giving us an update in the chat. Pujols just hit 695 off the Cubs. We were talking about it today. He was stuck at 694, and it's been a while. I think it's been like four days since he's homered. So
I'm pulling for the guy. Get him to 700. I want to see it happen.
That was in a 0-0 tie. I made it 2-0.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pulling for him. I mean, I was a big A-Rod guy. I probably shouldn't be admitting that, but he got to 696, and it's just like, ugh, you're four away. Come on. Like, you retired in July. Keep going. It would suck to see Albert anything less than 700, so hopefully he can hit it five more.
I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, it'd be one crazy home run month for any White Sox, hitting five home runs in a month, let alone a 42-year-old who's got like 17. He'd lead the White Sox in home runs by like two. I think he's got two more than Andrew Vaughn, who has 15. Let's go into that just absolute shellacking of the Twins on Saturday. The Sox won on Saturday 13-0. As we kind of alluded to, Dylan Cease went nine innings, no earned runs, seven strikeouts, two walks, only allowing one hit. He gets 26 straight outs. It wasn't consecutive. He wasn't retiring or facing the minimum, right?
He sort of was up to, I think, the seventh inning, because he walked Jake Cave in the third, but then there was a double play. So he had faced the minimum up to that point, but then there was a second walk. Drawn a blank on who it was. But, yeah, he walked another guy. But he had only faced one above the minimum at that point.
I think it was Celestino he ended up walking.
I think it was Celestino. That sounds right.
Sixth inning. Yeah, okay. He walked Celestino and then got Arise looking, and that was his second strikeout of the night. But that was the crazy part. You talked to Dylan after that game, and he kind of said, like, oh, through the first five innings, wasn't really me. And then I really started finding it and emptying out that gas tank in the later half. I mean, what was he like after that game, and what did he have to say about his performance? Because that's the first time he ever goes nine innings. We just talked about how amazed we were of him going eight innings against the Diamondbacks. Follows that up going nine innings against the Twins. What was that conversation like post game with Dylan?
I mean, one of the first things that we asked him about was, hey, you come this close, how does it feel? And obviously he's disappointed, because he said, it's an accomplishment I was really hoping to get, but he said, you know, it just shows you how difficult it is. You know, that's a really tough feat to accomplish. But you know, as we talked a little more into the detail of the game, he mentioned, yeah, I didn't feel like I had my best stuff the first five innings, which matches up with what we saw. It was very uncharacteristic of Dylan Cease not to be racking up a bunch of strikeouts. But then, you know, I think he said he got the feel for his slider a little better in the second half of the game, and that's where we saw the strikeouts start to come. So he did finish with seven on the night, and he looked a little more like himself in those last few innings. And like I said in the pregame show, just an encouraging outing from him, just to see him adjust like that and to be able to go through five innings without feeling like he had his best stuff by responding to what the Twins hitters were doing.
Right.
They were very aggressive, lots of, you know, first pitch swinging, second pitch swinging, you know, really trying to get a jump on him and putting the ball in play, and the defense was solid behind him and it was working. So even without the strikeouts, he was getting the job done.
Well, I thought it was funny, too. Len Casper and Steve Stone were talking to him today during the game, during the bottom of the third inning, and he said, pitcher strikeouts are for ego, which I thought was funny, because I wonder if a guy like that, who's had so many crazy strikeout games and has been leading the AL in strikeouts at one point this year, I wonder if he has a game like that where he only has seven strikeouts, but then it looks back and is like, wow, I almost did something historic there. Like, I wonder if that changes his mindset, because we really have seen Dylan come into his own. He's been so much more comfortable. He's been so much more confident. We see it after the eighth inning, after he goes through eight innings of no-hit ball, and he's walking off, pumping up the crowd. Like, he really has just turned into himself. And to release a poem, I think that takes a lot of confidence.
That's, oh, yeah.
To make it into a shirt takes a lot of confidence, and then continuing to back it up on the field takes a lot of confidence. So it is really great to see the White Sox kind of find their ace, because I know a lot of people were kind of questioning Giolito even when he was great in 2020 and 2021, just kind of questioning if he would be that guy. I think Dylan has kind of showed that there really isn't a conversation anymore about who the White Sox ace is. It's Dylan Cease, and we'll see if Michael Kopech can catch up in the next year or two.
Right, yeah, but right now Dylan Cease is your guy, and if I'm lining up a playoff series, game one, Dylan Cease gets the ball, no question. You wonder last night, is this a learning experience for him where he can reflect on it and he has some time to think about, you know, the way that game went? And it's a growth thing for a pitcher to realize, like, yeah, some games you're going to get those ego boosting strikeouts, but then some games it's just about getting the outs however they come. And at the end of the day, six, seven innings with 10 strikeouts is wonderful, but six, seven innings with two strikeouts, but you're not allowing any runs,
right,
that's great too. So, yeah, just a very, I think, a valuable outing for him in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he gets to save the bullpen too, which I thought was big on Friday, because you see Liam go in the ninth in a tie ball game to protect that lead, which was great. The White Sox don't have to use a pitcher on Sunday. They kind of emptied the bullpen out a little bit on Sunday. But if you do want to get our full reactions to Saturday's games, going through Dylan's start, we do have a full podcast episode posted up. So you kind of get two episodes today from Jared and I. But the White Sox, through the past five games before we get into Sunday's game, they had 56 hits, six doubles, 11 home runs, 35 RBIs. Just kind of felt like they were finding more of their confidence. They hit 318, 385, slug 450. So, I mean, it's really great. I know some of those, six of those runs came off of Nick Gordon and Twins position players pitching. But still, outside of that, it really felt like the White Sox offense, especially since that Kansas City series, has just been kind of clicking.
Yeah, it has. And even with the way that today went, you're going to have that with, even with it, an offense that's really feeling it and is doing well, they're not going to put up six to seven runs every single game. You're going to have, you know, maybe it's a day game after a night game kind of thing, a really emotional high followed by, okay, it's the next afternoon. And you don't have the same energy level because it's really difficult to do that. So you're going to have these types of games. I think what you watch for is, what does this offense look like in the next series? Because they've won the last two series. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, that's what a winning, successful team needs to be able to do. Can you win series? They've done that for two of them now. Can you go to Seattle, which is going to be a tough matchup? That's, you know, that's a hard road trip, especially to start out against the Mariners. And I want to see what they look like there. Because if they can go out there tomorrow and start hitting again, then you kind of take today's result and just, you know.
Right. You know, flush it.
Yeah, flush it.
You know, especially, I mean, again, I wonder what the come down is like after that 13-0 game. I know John says, who cares about Cease when the Sox can't make the playoffs? But, I mean, you see after this weekend, you see what they do against the Royals. I was looking for a sweep against the Twins, but I think I saw enough this weekend to at least give me confidence in this team, at least making it competitive throughout the entire 162. I know it should be more of a landslide. I know they should be in the AL Central lead at this point, but performances like Cease can ignite teams. And obviously, you know, they follow it up with a dud. So I guess how much does that really work? But I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be too beat up after this one, just because, you know, Dylan Bundy's always given them problems. They've consistently have, it seems like they've found something. And two, I mean, we'll give some good news in this 5-1 loss. The Sox end up losing 5-1 today against the Twins. The thing that really sucks out to me, seven hits today for the Sox, three of them extra base hits. So it's not like they were really going with that typical single. We saw a double from Elvis Andrus. We saw a great double from A.J. Pollock. We saw a great shot from Gavin Sheets that ended up being a double. Like, there was moments where it felt like the White Sox could have broke this open. It just wasn't there for them today.
Yeah, and that's just a normal sort of baseball thing where sometimes you hit the ball really hard and it just doesn't go to the right spot. They had a lot of very hard contact. Just look at what Eloy Jimenez, just him by himself, you know, the exit velocities on the balls that he was putting in play, and he didn't get a hit. So that's unavoidable. But those are the things that, you know, these players will talk about after games like this, where they recognize that, hey, this isn't the kind of loss that I need to fret over because I hit the ball hard, but it just wasn't dropping in the right spot. I can't control that. We went up against a starting pitcher who's always given us a hard time. And credit to Dylan Bundy, who really kept the ball away from the zone and was getting them to chase. I mean, he did exactly what his game plan must have been. But for them, that's, you know, you recognize that and you just say, hey, that's not something that we're going to fret over. And even with Giolito, I mean, we know what he's capable of, but so your expectations are high, but two runs on a mistake pitch home run in five innings, that's That's not bad.
Right. I mean, what we usually say is, you know, if you're going to give up a mistake or you're going to make a mistake, make sure it's a solo mistake. So I think, honestly, like the thing that I am more frustrated with was the fact that he led off the fourth inning with a walk and then led off the fifth inning with a walk, because that's a two-run homer now that you walked the leadoff guy for Carlos Correa. So I think that's the part that makes me most frustrated from Lucas. Let's look at the starting pitching lines for today. Also, you mentioned Aloy hitting the ball hard today. Three balls, batted balls today, over 100 miles on the exit velocity in the seventh, first, and fourth innings. So that was awesome to see from Aloy. Giolito went five innings, two earned runs, six hits, two walks, five Ks. Dylan Bundy, five innings pitched, no earned runs, two hits, one K, or one walk, four Ks. You mentioned it about Bundy. It just felt like he's got that scouting report for the Sox. He mixes speeds well, and the White Sox just really stay off balance against him. But Giolito, I mean, if I was to tell White Sox fans before today he give you five innings of two earned run ball, I don't think fans would be that upset.
No, you'll take that. I mean, that's he, to use a baseball cliche, put his team in a position to win. It just didn't, the other half of the, you know, the other side of the lineup just didn't get it done. Yeah, you take five innings of two-run ball, that's most of the time you've got a real shot at winning a game like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's look at Giolito's pitch mix today and what he featured. It was kind of there. I think you just want him to be a little bit more dominant. And again, I think that would come with more fastball velocity, but it's still sitting around 92.9 where it has been this entire year. He throws 54% fastballs, 25% changeups, 18% sliders, three curveballs. I know people were pretty dazzled by the first curveball that he threw. Ended up being a called strike for a strikeout at the top of the zone. It was a very nice pitch, but he just didn't use that a ton today. The pitch that really sticks out, I guess, is the slider. Just didn't get a ton of whiffs on that, which was probably the main reason he wasn't super effective today. Only one whiff on five swings on that slider. He did get three called strikes, which was good, but you still need more called strikes if you're only going to get one whiff. The fastball was pretty good today, though. 11 called strikes plus whiffs, eight called strikes. So it kind of just shows you that his command of at least that pitch is there. And same with the changeup, eight called strikes plus whiffs on 24 pitches. That's a 33% called strike plus whiff percentage. MLB average is 27. So his changeup in the zone, floating out of the zone, getting nice swings and misses, and a couple big hacks as well. So I guess if Lucas is going to maintain this pitcher or be this guy, I think he can be. It's just all about forcing fastball control. Like, I think Lucas can give you these starts until the end of the year as long as he's able to control that forcing fastball. We saw that Houston Astros game that really got away from him, that 21-5 game. He got into a lot of two-strike counts, but the main thing was that when he was trying to get guys out with his fastball, he was leaving it a little bit too much up or a little bit too much middle. Today, I think he didn't make that mistake too much outside of leaving it middle for Carlos Correa on a 0-0 count.
Right. Yeah, and when you're able to control that fastball, it helps to set up your other pitches really nicely as well, and puts you in a position where even if some of your breaking stuff or off-speed stuff isn't working as well as you'd like it to, when you're able to locate the four-seamer, you can get yourself through five innings and do what he did today. So, all in all, really not a bad start from Giolito.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about Giolito, and we'll hear from Vinny Duber, who spoke to Lucas Giolito after today's game. But first, we got to let you know about PointsBet Sportsbook. They're counting down the days until the football season with a new offer every day until the season kicks off. From now until September 8th, PointsBet's Power Hour will unlock a new daily offer from 12 to 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. So sign up for PointsBet now using code CHGO to also get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. And don't miss out on your chance to get daily access to free bets, boosted odds, and so much more now through September 8th. But that's not it. If you make a $51 or more first-time deposit, you'll receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, like Jared Willis's written work, like Vinny Duber's written work. You also get access to the CHGO Lounge, which is a Discord channel where you get to chat with all of the CHGO personalities. And you even get a free shirt of your choice from a CHGO locker. So if you're looking for a brand new White Sox shirt, you're looking to support your ace, you got the size C shirt over in the CHGO locker. You can visit that at chgolocker.com. So download the PointsBet app today and use code CHGO to take advantage of this limited time offer. Don't just bet. Live your bet life at PointsBet. If you or someone who has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services. And our next partner has a product I use literally every day, and I've been using it for about 6 months now. First off, happy birthday to CHGO. This is the six-month
anniversary.
Our baby is 6 months old. Right now, I think you have kids.
I do.
So we're now no longer shopping in the 0 to 6 months anymore. We're shopping in the 6 to 18, yeah. Right?
Some solid foods going in. You know, these are big, exciting times.
This is great. We get to eat solid foods now. And I think Athletic Greens is a solid food. I'm not sure. It's more of a drink. And now I've been on it for about 6 months, and I love it. It doesn't taste super healthy. It kind of has a mild tropical taste that I look forward to each and every morning. And with one scoop of delicious AG1s, I absorb 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help me start my day right. This special blend of ingredients help my gut health, my nervous system, my immune system, my ability to have that energy to have a podcast for an hour, my ability to focus during that hour-long podcast, all of the important things to help me get my day completed. It's lifestyle-friendly whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, daily-free, or gluten-free, and Athletic Greens has over 7,002 five-star reviews. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No needs for millions of different pills and supplements to look out for your health. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CHGOSOX. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/CHGOSOX to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Let's go out to Guaranteed Rate Field, where the White Sox lost 5-1 against the Twins today, and talk to Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. Hi, Vinny.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
We're good. How are things in the White Sox clubhouse after today's loss? Jared said it was very, very active, very, very loud after Saturday's 13-0 win, so I'm assuming it was probably quiet.
Yes, as Jared well knows, these things entirely depend on the result of the game that day. So, yes, it was not a raucous atmosphere today. The guys are getting ready. Also, it's a getaway day, obviously, so they've got to mosey on out of here in a relative hurry. But everybody's kind of milling about, and they're doing a football jersey-themed road trip. So everybody was putting on their gear as they're getting ready for the trip.
Any weird ones?
So Chicago fans are going to notice, probably think that there's a lot of weird ones. Very few Bears jerseys out there. I think there were two Justin Fields, two Walter Payton. So you can all get very excited for Tim Anderson and Larry Garcia rocking the Justin Fields jerseys. Michael Kopech was one of the two guys in the Walter Payton jerseys, along with Elvis Andrews. But that was the only Bears representation. I think a lot of it has to do with fantasy football. Sounds like the guys who are in the league are repping the player that they're going to draft in the fantasy draft, in the first round of the fantasy draft. So you're going to see probably the whole league represented, but a few folks will be disappointed to learn there are a couple big Packer fans on the team here. Jake Diekman and Jimmy Lambert, yeah. The both of them. None of them from Wisconsin. Yeah.
I did see a couple Packers jerseys in there yesterday, so yeah.
Not Jimmy. I've liked Jimmy. Jimmy's like kind of warmed up to me, and now he's a Packer fan?
Yeah.
From Southern California at that.
What?
He went to the Bill and Ted High School.
What does that have to do with the Packers?
I don't know. Oh, people right. can pick know. Whatever team they want to root for, I suppose, but yeah.
Oh, question for Jimmy, I guess.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, we got to start asking about these guys' jerseys and stuff. Let's talk about Lucas Giolito. I know they don't give out Randy Moss jerseys after losses, so he probably doesn't have a Randy Moss jersey in his locker today. But what was Lucas saying after today's game, and what did he say about that home run? Because it was really the only mistake he made today.
Yeah, that's what he said. Made one bad pitch, and it cost him two runs. Obviously, he wasn't happy about the walk that preceded it. But really, the thing that he was getting upset about was, you know, kind of the deep counts that he was getting into. Threw a lot of pitches, and, you know, obviously he was up almost all the way to 100 there just when he came out after five innings. So he's really trying to work on not doing that, not, you know, throwing ball one or ball two with those first pitch of the at-bat there. So, and it's something Ethan Katz told us before the game also was, you know, what are you guys focusing on with Lucas to try to get him back to normal? Making sure the first pitch is a strike and not giving up runs so the offense is chasing. you know, that Correa homer didn't come in the first inning, like some of the damage that has come against Lucas this year, but still ended up kind of having the same effect of putting the White Sox behind before, you know, the offense could get anything going. And of course, the offense didn't really get anything going all day outside of the seventh inning. So not a good combination, even though Lucas was fine, in my estimation. He was obviously unhappy with the way things went because it ended in a loss.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, about Luis Robert. We heard that he came off of paternity list. I think that's kind of the big question here with the Sox. Comes off paternity list. What is the rumor around the Sox clubhouse about when he'll play or rejoin the Sox lineup?
No need for it to be a rumor. He's expected to be in there tomorrow, Miguel Cairo said. It's a late afternoon start out in Seattle. Luis Robert should be in the starting lineup. They wanted to give him one more day today, to make sure that wrist is doing great and that he could get through batting practice without having to worry about, is your playing time today riding on batting practice kind of thing. Just go ahead and let him take it, try to get back to normal, and hopefully tomorrow. Miguel said it with pretty definitive authority that he will be in the lineup tomorrow. So that is good news for the White Sox. Obviously, though, you got to watch closely because it was very noticeable the last time he did play that he was not 100% with the way he was swinging. Just, a very strange thing to see from a right-handed hitter swinging with his right hand like a tennis racket. And you don't want to see that anymore if you're the White Sox. So hopefully they hope that they've gotten this behind him and he can start tomorrow and go all the way to the rest of the season without having to miss any more time.
Vinny, another guy that we're hoping to see in the next few days. I know yesterday we chatted real briefly with Michael Kopech, and the only thing he said was that he was hoping to return during the Seattle series. I know it would line up, I think, for him on Wednesday. Was he around today? Was there any word about update on Kopech at all?
He threw his second bullpen in the last 3 days, and Ethan Katz said it went really well. So I think everybody is expecting his return to be pretty soon. I think probably when you're looking at the line, whether it's going to line up there, that would make the most sense to me as to when he would be back. But it certainly seems like during this road trip would be the more general diagnosis that the team has given. He going to benefit a little bit, I think, from this stay on the injured list. Ethan Katz was saying it might have even been a blessing in disguise because they were going to have to start getting creative with maybe skipping him in the rotation to make sure that they got him, didn't overwork him with the quote-unquote creative way that they were going to be using him this season. So this kind of came along and did it for him. Obviously, you don't want it to be because of an injury, but like he said, now that Kopech looks good and is pitching healthily, this might have been a little bit of a silver lining here for the White Sox.
What about my guy Aaron Bummer? I saw he was down in Charlotte. Have you gotten an update on my guy Aaron, if he's going to be coming back to the Sox bullpen soon?
Not a specific one. Soon is what we hear. So I think he's eligible to come back. Obviously, they put him on the 60-day DL for some 40-man, reasons the other day. But he's eligible to come back. He started a rehab assignment. So soon is what we've heard. Nothing really more specific than that. But it would make sense to see him coming up too. He's here. I saw him in the clubhouse. So perhaps on this road trip, he will be activated as well.
Fingers crossed. I do want to ask you guys now that we've basically had coverage, at these games. I think over the past six games, we've had somebody at the park. What is the vibe been like with Miguel Cairo taking over? I'll ask Jared just like, what was it like or what have you noticed? And then Vinny, you could follow up with anything else that you've noticed. But has there been any differences between Tony or Miguel Cairo, or is Miguel just basically trying to be as much as like Tony as he possibly can be?
I mean, just based on what I saw and, keep in mind that I was coming in off of that really exciting win on Friday and then what turned into Dylan Cease's incredible night. So I saw a lot of very positive energy. I mean, these guys are, definitely feeling good. A few of them mentioned that they felt like the vibe around the team was different the last few days. But like we talked about in the pregame, whoever the manager is, when you start winning games – that fixes so many things. You feel a lot better, and it does put you in a place where you feel like you can just continue that. So, based on that one, me kind of parachuting in there for a day and seeing some of that, yeah, everybody looked good, but there's a little bit of, it's real easy to feel good given everything that was going on when I was there. So I'm curious, like, Vinny, some of these other days that you've been there, what it's looked like.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, good vibes are the product of good results, first and foremost. So I think that, you know, when you got these wins, they had four of them in a row. Yeah, it's going to be different because the White Sox haven't won four games in a row very much this season. But they are very much crediting the players only meeting that they had. I believe it was Thursday morning before the final game of that series with the Royals, as being kind of a game changer in terms of the feelings in the clubhouse right now. They feel united. They feel on the same page. They feel like they are very much cognizant of where they are in the season here. You're getting down to it. There's, I think, what are we, under 30 games now, I think. So they know what's in front of them. They know what they have to do. And that's not to say they didn't know back in August or they didn't know back in July, but it's crunch time. And they're aware of that. And I think that that is putting a good kind of pressure on this team, if that makes sense. But really, the main thing there were that they are crediting for feeling better lately is just kind of being together, which, again, is not something they weren't before. But reiterating it and recommitting to it has they've found it helpful here the last week. Now, obviously, they go to Seattle and Oakland. If they lose five of the next seven games, they're not going to be feeling good anymore. And they're going to be searching for answers once again, right? But right now, in the midst of a two straight series where they won two-thirds of the games, that's a very big positive for them. They're right there. They're right there in the AL Central standings. It is crowded up there with those three teams, and the Sox are one of them. We talked about the math not burying them, you know, when they were six games out. Now they're far fewer than six games out, and it looks far more realistic for what they're trying to do and what they could be able to do here. I would not read into it one bit that there is any sort of big difference now that Tony has not been here, other than maybe that it has worked as a motivational thing for them. You know what I mean? You got a guy who every player in that locker room says that they're close with this guy, that he is the fans can be as mad as they want. The guys who are in there with him every day, they keep saying how much they love him. And when this happens to somebody that you are close with, you know, that you're working with 6 months every day for 6 months or longer, it is obviously going to be at the forefront of your mind. And I don't think that there is some sort of relief because Tony's gone like there might be in the fan base. I think that they're, perhaps a little motivated by someone who they care about going through a tough time, you know, or at least a serious situation physically.
Can kind of continue that conversation. We do have a super chat from a stupid donkey who said, listen, I'm a Sox fan. I was at Mark's perfect game, got there in the third inning. I was at the blockout game in 2008, paid $1,600 for a corn game ticket. This current team sucks. I hate to say it, but they suck. Kind of talk about fan reaction here, Vinny.
Wow, the positivity is just overwhelming.
Hey, I mean, we probably would have gotten a lot of different super chats after the 13-0 win yesterday. So I'm just going to chalk that up.
I was going to say, they just won four games in a row. You can't let them lose one. My goodness.
They stink. I do want to talk, kind of color this, though, with some quotes that you guys got recently. You kind of talked about the length of the season. Jared talked to Kendall Graveman yesterday, and he said you can't get lulled to sleep a little bit in the middle of the season. Everyone can, but these games matter just as much as the first game we played this season as far as what they cost. That doesn't change, and the mindset definitely doesn't change, but I think the energy in the building creates a little bit more urgency. We see a lot of energy in the crowd today. Over 33, I think I saw what was reported. You obviously have four games straight winning. That's going to bring a lot of energy. Has the energy been up? I mean, what did you see on Friday, Vinny? And what, I mean, you mentioned it on the pregame show, just the loudness of that locker room on Saturday.
With the team or in the ballpark? Obviously the team, I think the team has more energy. And again, I think that comes from the winning. But, you know, the crowd today was great. I thought the crowd today was really good. I think, again, it's the result, right? And I mean, I think I had to go back to the car before the game started to get my sweatshirt because we're up in the press box on the fourth floor. The wind's blowing in. It was cold. I was ill-prepared. But so I had to go back to the car. There are the lines outside the stadium to get in. I mean, the fans who come to these games seem fired up. And I don't think, as much as they love the wave here at Guaranteed Rate Field, I think they're starting to love their socks just as much.
You guys pro-wave, anti-wave?
I'm not anti-wave, but it does irk me a little bit depending on when it's employed. And I do have to say that when they started using it last night, I was I wanted to say, guys, we need to shut this down. Not right now.
Yeah, I was in the crowd for that, and I'm wondering, like, Dylan Cease has a no-hitter going here, and we're doing the wave. Let's pay attention to what's going on right now.
That's a moment when I'm like, no, this is not the time for it. You know, if you're getting pounded, then you just want to, like, lighten the mood and have some fun and do the wave, fine. Or if it's a blowout win and there's nothing serious going on, no problem with it at all. It's all about when you do it.
But here's the thing. People love it, though. The participation, the percentage of the participation is off the charts. You're talking about 90% of the people in the lower bowl doing the wave. People can talk down the wave as much as they want. The people in the seats are doing it. And I'm not a wave guy. When the wave goes by, I sit down. I'm not a wave guy if I'm at a game. It's just not my thing, you know. But the people are doing it. So as much hate as I see for the wave on social media and our conversations here, that is a very small sample size, because the vast majority of the folks who are actually in the ballpark are doing it and they're loving it.
That's a fair point.
I'll just up the hate, though. I think that ruined Dylan Cease's no-hitter. It's not, you know, Nick Gordon pitching in the eighth inning. It's not him leaving a slider over the middle of the plate to arise. It's the wave. All right.
It's the wave.
There was no wave during Mark Burley's perfect game in 2009, my friends. Going back to the conversation about energy, I want to go to the quote that you got then on Friday from Liam Hendricks, because we haven't been able to talk about this yet. But Liam said, everyone's got a little bit more pep in their step. It's one of those mantras, fuck it, let's just go. This is who we are. We need to embrace who we are instead of being that stoic, old-timey baseball player. Show some emotion, get angry, and piss everybody off. I'll go with you, Vinny, and then Jared, you can follow up. Any examples of showing that emotion or getting angry and pissing people off that you guys heard from the players or just saw on the field that can kind of talk about that energy that maybe they're trying to put into the game?
Well, I mean, I talked to Liam after the win on Friday, when that ninth inning was a very emotional ninth inning, obviously, with the hit by pitch there with Vaughn and then the benches clearing. I think that's kind of the one that I was pointing to, because you saw the footage of those guys getting together. You saw, you know, the video that was passed around social media of Lance Lynn getting out there right away. Yasmani Grandal, AJ Pollock, they're caught on the broadcast right in the middle of that thing, you know, really vocalizing their feelings in that moment. And, you know, I think that again, I think you would see that probably from any team. And that's in this situation, that's baseball, you know, when those guys come together, you know, in the middle of the field, that's kind of how you're supposed to act. But these are two teams who are in a playoff race with each other, and they're going to see each other again too. Six more games between these teams over the last nine of the season. There might be something on the line over that last week and a half, and there might be some more moments like that one, not necessarily with benches clearing, but just in the amount of intensity that's going to be there, and a close game late like that. I mean, these two closers know what they're doing. I mean, you talk about an example of emotion. Liam Hendricks was talking about himself personally. He said he went back and he looked at every strikeout he's had since 2013. That's what he was doing the other day, was watching a decade's worth of strikeouts. And he noticed that he evolved into that guy who he is, right? Who people recognize, the guy who's always, you know, stomping around on the mound and screaming profanities when he's throwing the ball and doing the fist pump at the end of the game. And he said that lately he noticed he wasn't doing that as much. And so he's, again, recommitting. I'll use that word, recommitting himself to trying to be that guy, to be that guy. And we've heard comments like this from him. If you go back to last year, you know, was his first year on the South Side, he kind of talked up that, you know, this is such a confident team that we're going to be irritating. We're bordering on arrogant, and we're going to piss everybody off, he basically said, because of the guys that we have and what we do. You look back to Tim Anderson's bat flip, right? I mean, he's, you know, he does that, and what happened? Brad Keller and the Royals got pissed off, right? And I think Liam was talking about that as a very positive thing. The personalities on this team, the big personalities on this team, he wants to see more of it. And I think that's kind of what Rick Hahn said at the trade deadline, right? Not necessarily, obviously, happy with the job that he did at the trade deadline, but saying, you know, well, here's a way we can get better. We got to go back to being those guys, that team that everybody kind of fell in love with here on the South Side. And I think you're seeing it break through, because you got to win in order to be like that. You've got to win. Mm-hmm. There's nothing you can get cocky about when you're under 500, you know, and if the White Sox could string some wins together here, you're going to see that team. Listen, when Jose Abreu on Friday night thought he got hit by a pitch, or acted like he got hit by a pitch to end that game. They were chasing him around the infield while the Twins were asking for a review. I mean, that's the those fun White Sox that people saw the last few years. They're in there. It just takes winning to bring them out. And who knows if that's going to happen. But certainly the last week, you've seen a team far closer to that than anything probably you've seen for the previous 5 months of this season.
Yeah, they're about to go on a seven-game road trip, so we'll see if they can continue their winning ways. It's going to be a tough test against Seattle. Final things I just want to ask you, has there been any update on Tony La Russa and his health, and if we can expect when he might return, if he will return to the Sox? And then TA, is he kind of at least still in line for that six-week return?
Really no update on either. I know Miguel Cairo was recently asked about Tim Anderson, and it was kind of a... He's doing work and he's doing what he's supposed to. He's moving around out there. He is participating, but other than that, not a lot of real specifics when it comes to TA. And Tony La Russa the same way, really. Miguel's talking to him every day, probably multiple times a day if you include text and stuff like that, because we know how into all of these games Tony is and how much he wants his teams to win. So I'm sure he's got plenty of opinions on what happens both before and after games. There has been no update. So I guess the same update held before, which was soon. The idea was that they were waiting for the results of these tests that he went to Arizona to take. And certainly who knows how long that those were going to take. But I think they were expecting within a matter of days to know what was going on. We're coming up here on a week here by before they finished that series in Seattle that Tony has been absent from the team. So you would think that before you get to that 1 week mark, you would have some information to pass along of some fashion.
Appreciate all the updates from Guarantee Rate Field, Vinny. You can follow Vinny on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. Talk to you on Monday. We'll see you in studio, I guess. Well, no, Tuesday, because we're off on Monday. So we'll see you on Tuesday.
Enjoy the holiday, fellas.
Enjoy the holiday.
See you, Vinny.
And I'm going to be enjoying the holiday betting. I'm going to be gambling using my favorite app, PointsBet. If you enjoy CHGO, one way to help us continue to grow is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. Not only are you going to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000, but if you make a $51 or more first-time deposit, you receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, like Vinny's articles where that Liam Hendricks quote was featured, like Jared's articles where that Kendall Graveman quote was featured. A lot of great stuff over at allchgo.com. We also will give you access to the CHGO Lounge, which is our CHGO Discord. You could chat with Vinny, me, Jared, Herb, all in the White Sox chat. We have a ton of different rooms for whatever fandom you have. And you'll get a free shirt of your choice from a CHGO locker. You can check out the locker at chgolocker.com. And we have the brand new Cy C shirt up. So if you are ready for the Cy Young run through September, make sure you are signing up with the PointsBet app, making that $51 or more first-time deposit using the code CHGO, and you'll get a free CHGO membership. You'll get a free shirt from the CHGO locker, and you'll get a ton of money to use on the best sports betting app. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. You'll be signing up at the fastest sportsbook easier than ever, so you can start living your bet life in seconds. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Jared, we got through all of those injury updates, and there's still more to go. Yoan Moncada, you saw him active on the field on Saturday.
Yeah, yesterday he was doing a lot of running the base paths, doing some defensive work as well. Looked really good. I mean, he looks like he's really close. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him come back within, maybe during this road trip as well. Miguel Cairo talked about that on Saturday, just, in sort of a hopeful tone of, hey, maybe we can actually write out a lineup card with all of the guys that we want to have in it.
Right.
So, he looked really good. He was doing, full infield work, so a lot of running work yesterday. Didn't appear to be any issues. So, Signs of a return for him soon look good.
And if I do my math correctly, he was placed on the IL on the 27th. It was a 10-day IL, so I think he will be able to return tomorrow. So I think that the 10-day IL stint ends tomorrow. So we'll see if they activate him and add him to the roster. I know Steven's disappointed that that might mean the end of Romy Gonzalez.
He's been good.
He has been good. Hey, the one thing that people keep bringing up in the comments that we haven't talked about just yet from the 5-1 loss was the seventh inning where the White Sox kind of started things getting going. And the one guy that, you know, you probably want to replace, or at least I want to replace on this team, is Leury Garcia. So Eloy Jimenez smoked a ball out into right. It was an out. So the Sox had one out. Then Gavin Sheets hit a ground rule double to deep center field, putting a runner on second base. Then Grandal single to right. Gavin Sheets got a nice jump off second base, but Joe McEwing didn't want to send him. So first and third with one out. Then Pollock doubled to deep right. Adam Haseley, who was the pinch runner for Grandal, couldn't get around all the way. So only one run scored in Gavin Sheets. So runners are on first and third again. And Leury Garcia comes up. And this is right after they took out Michael Former, who was giving up a ton of hard contact. They bring in Johan Duran, who's throwing 102-mile-per-hour fastballs and 100-mile-per-hour splitters, and this disgusting curveball as well. He is a very, very nasty pitcher. But the main thing that we've known with Leury Garcia is that he struggles with velocity. Anything over 95 miles per hour, he is going to probably swing and miss. And after the first pitch against Duran is a big swing and miss at a fastball at the top of the zone, I'm like, all right, Leury, get a bunt down. He gets the bunt down, and I felt like, you know, Nostradamus here saying Leury was going to bunt. The Twins didn't feel that way because they were ready to field it.
They're ready for it.
They get the play at home, getting Haseley out. I didn't mind the idea of trying to get that run across by any means necessary. I didn't think Leury could make contact with a fastball against Duran. But I guess that's the issue here is, you know, at least for Steven, is you could have, I guess, gone to Josh Harrison off the bench, but this team is kind of thin. And now you're looking at Leury, or I look at Leury, as kind of the guy that really doesn't belong on this team just because he's been struggling for so much of this year. And even in big situations, you really can't trust him to be a normal major league hitter. So I do wonder if they make a really bolden move by just DFAing Leury. I think that's very far-fetched. I think it's probably going to be Romy being sent down. But, I mean, what do we make of how this roster kind of shakes out once Moncada comes back and once Robert comes back? Is easier with Haseley.
Yeah, I think that's an easier one. Or, you know, Mark Payton, who go with him. Yeah, with Leury with the bunt, I'm with you. It's the kind of spot where that seems to be the right move. He just didn't execute it all that well because it was basically right at the pitcher. But laying down a good bunt on a 100-mile-per-hour pitch that's high in the zone, easier said than done. What I wonder is, because there are the easy roster moves to make. Romy Gonzalez is the easy roster move to make because there's options.
Right.
But because we talked a little bit about, you're in crunch time, under 30 games left, you're really in this dogfight for this division. Is this the time to make the move that's a little more bold? Because with Leury Garcia, you know what you have. It's not like anything's going to change there. So is this the time to say, you know what, Leury, we've got to move on. And that creates the roster spot for Moncada, and then you can keep someone like Gonzalez in the major leagues for at least a little bit longer because the potential there seems to be a lot better. This is easy for me to say in my position, but I think it's the time to make the bold move. I think it's the time to do that because Leury Garcia, again, is, you know what you have, and unfortunately he's not going to execute some of those spots that you need, and you're going to have a lot more high leverage moments like this. They've got a lot more games against Cleveland and Minnesota in September, and you need somebody who can come through for you, even with something as little as laying down a squeeze bunt so you can score a run to tie a game.
Right. You just got to get it towards the first baseline or towards the third baseline. Over,
yeah.
Just right back at the pitcher.
That's
and it's
all
a,
it takes.
It's an easy out there. And the thing, too, about Leury, like, you look at 2019, he played in 140 games and was in the outfield for 120 of them. In 2021, he played in 126 games, was in the outfield for 65 of them. The main part that I was sold to by this front office about Leury Garcia is that he is, you know, this tool that they can use anywhere. And he's still played 21 games in the outfield, but if you're going to be bragging about his ability to play everywhere, I mean, he's mainly been your second baseman. He's gotten more starts at second base each year. He played two games at second base in 2019 for the White Sox, five in 2020 in 16 games, then 36 out of 126 in 2021, and 45 in 88 in 2022. He's mainly been your second baseman this year. And at second base, he's bad. Like he is, if what we're looking at for his entire 2022 resume, like he has been mainly a second baseman, and if he is just going to provide that for the White Sox, I don't think that he should be on this team I think his time's up basically. I think you could DFA him at this point just because Romy provides more youth, more energy. We've seen Romy play right field last year too. Like I'm willing to try him out there if you really need him in a pinch. Josh Harrison's played left field before. Like the White Sox really aren't afraid to put guys who kind of, you know, might not succeed out there. I mean, look at Andrew Vaughn today in left field.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, I don't know. I think it's just I'm done watching Leury Garcia swing a bat. So I guess that's the Leury Garcia portion.
You know, the other thing, though, like with Moncada this season, we said, okay, his bat really hasn't played. But the one thing we've been praising him for has been his glove. Leury this year, no matter where you've played him, nothing's really stood out for me defensively.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And, like, the bat's been, you know, very, 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 very sub, you know, average. I don't know. And Clark's asking, is Andrews an option anywhere besides second shortstop? I'm willing to try him at second base. He's mainly played every single game in his career at shortstop, but I'm willing to give it a shot because he is that much better of a hitter than Leury. And defending or defense wise, like he's played the middle infield, over like 1,800 games in his career.
And it's not uncommon for a guy who can play one middle infield spot to be able to flip and learn the other spot, especially a veteran player like that. And I would think that the move from shortstop to second base is easier than vice versa. Mm-hmm. So I would, if you had to, if it came down to it, I would trust Andrews to at least give you serviceable defense at second base.
Right. You'd think. I mean, he's given you serviceable defense at shortstop. It's a tougher position to play. So you'd hope that they'd be able to play Andrews there at second. The White Sox now after this game are 67-67. It's their 24th time this year at 500. Let's look at this because we talked about this on Monday on our off day show. Most time spent at 500 since 2010. These are the teams that I found. The 2010 Athletics went 81-81. They had 33 games at 500. The 2011 Blue Jays 81-81. They had three games at 500. The 2019 Diamondbacks, they were 85-77. They had 30 games at 500. The 2021 Phillies, they went 82-80. They had 25 games at 500. And the Sox right now, we don't know what their final record is going to be. They're 67-67 right now, but 24 games at 500. I think the Diamondbacks are an interesting team out of that because we end up seeing them going 85-77. All of their games being at 300 were around the 132 game mark. That's kind of where the Sox are right now. I just find it interesting that you see them kind of take that boost, and they didn't have a game at 500 or after once they reached that 30 game mark, and which I think was about September. So I mean, Vinny talked about it in his hit. Like, if there is a time for a run, it has to be right now, and it can't be like you can't even be waiting until the last nine games. Like, you need to start building that momentum. So if the White Sox are able to get a win out in Seattle, I'll feel really good about where the White Sox stand in the postseason. Monday they play in Seattle at 5:40. It's Lance Lynn versus Marco Gonzalez. On Tuesday, September 6th, it starts at 8:40. We will have a pre and post game for you. It's Johnny Cueto versus Logan Gilbert. And on Wednesday, September 7th, at Seattle at 3:10, it is Luis Castillo, recently acquired from the Cincinnati Reds, starting for the Mariners, and possibly Michael Kopech. So looking at that pitching matchup there, how do you feel about the Sox going into Seattle?
I feel good, especially if Kopech is able to return for that Wednesday start to close out the series. Again, that's a tough series. No question you're going to Seattle, but to get Lynn, Cueto, and maybe Kopech, and to ask for two wins out of those three games – yeah, I like their chances to get another, you know, now three series wins in a row. Not going to be easy, but with those three guys on the mound, I like how things are lining up.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how Kopech comes back just because it was so scary watching him pitch in Kansas City. And if he doesn't have his velocity, we know that he is just, you know, more ineffective. I mean, any pitcher would be. But hopefully it's not like Tyler Malley bad. You know, hopefully since it was just an knee injury, not shoulder inflammation like Malley was dealing with, hopefully Kopech is able to bounce back. But especially game one, we're not going to be covering this game, but Lance Lynn versus Marco Gonzalez, you have a lefty on the bump. Like, the White Sox should be able to take advantage advantage, especially thinking about left field in Seattle. It's kind of a shorter porch. If the White Sox are able to really jump on Marco Gonzalez, I've really liked what we've seen from Lance Lynn recently. They mentioned on the broadcast that Lance Lynn, due to his late start to the season, he's probably more fresh than he's ever been. I think eight of his nine last starts, he's had six or more strikeouts. Like, he's really found a groove here. So, I mean, this is going to be a really important series opener for the Sox.
Definitely. And when you think about, too, the fact that Lance Lynn missed the first chunk of the season, what do we typically see from starting pitchers? It takes them sometimes a few starts into their season before they really hit their groove, before they have their best stuff. So you're getting Lance Lynn right now pitching like you might, you know, any other starting pitcher who started in April around Memorial Day or something, when they really start to get hit their groove, which timing wise that's pretty a nice thing to be getting. So right. Yeah, he's looking good, and to have that arm fresh going into this stretch run, that's a good thing to have.
Mm-hmm. Last eight games for Lance Lynn, he's got an ERA of 2.61, looking like the guy that finished third in the Cy Young last year for the Sox. That's going to do it for today's show. We are off tomorrow for Labor Day. Want to give a huge thanks to Jared Willis for joining us today, coming in for the pre- and post-game show. Again, don't forget, you got two episodes today. You got the recap of Saturday's game, Dylan Cease's phenomenal nine-inning performance against the Twins, and today's post-game as well, where we recapped the series and talked to Vinny Duber about some injuries. You can follow Jared on Twitter, at JWillis, and it's wise instead of ice, as Herb says, at JWYLLYS. Thank you, Jared, and make sure to follow him for all of his articles coming out for the end of the season, whether it be White Sox or Cubs. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson, and you can follow Vinny Duber on Twitter at Vinny Duber. Herb Lawrence will be with us on Tuesday, and shout out to Matthew Cortese, who is going to be in Seattle. Hopefully Johnny Cueto throws a no-hitter for you, and they win 5-0, Matthew. But we'll talk to you guys on Tuesday. Thank you to Stephen Nicholas for your production, and thank you to Fleetwood Mac for their 1979 album, Tusk. Goodbye, go White Sox.